Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview.
Okay, so welcome back to the Pandemic Sensory Archive. Today I'm joined by Agnes Arnold Foster, who is a historian. But I'll leave the introduction to you, Agnes. So if you want to introduce yourself and kind of what you do and kind of what your expertise is when it comes to the senses.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. So as you said, I'm a historian of medicine and healthcare. And latterly, I've been tagging on work and the emotions to that little encapsulation of my identity and work. And I am particularly interested in the history of healthcare professionals and practitioners, so doctors, nurses, but also other people who make up the hospital and particular workforce, like healthcare assistants or cleaners or porters, all the different people who are part of that kind of ecosystem. And what I'm really interested in is partly about how doctors and nurses and others think about and feel about their roles and their identities, how they acquire new medical and scientific knowledge about people and health and ill health and the body, and also how they relate to one another and feel about those relationships in the workplace. And so my work spans the 19th, 20th, and even the 21st centuries. So I'm a historian in a kind of strange way, in that much of my work recently has been about the kind of early 21st century. And so I'm having a bit of an identity crisis myself. But one of the things I'm really interested in is in the kind of humane interactions between carer and patient, or the person who is unwell and the person who is looking after them. How do they understand each other? How does the doctor understand the patient's feelings and experiences? How do they identify symptoms and signs? And how do those sorts of interactions work out in a kind of sensory sense? What are the senses that doctors and nurses deploy to better understand their work and their patients?
So thinking a bit more specifically about touch then in that, because you sort of touched there on, didn't mean to say that. You've touched the hair on the interaction between patient and medical practitioner. And, you know, if you were going to kind of give us a very brief sketch of the history of touch in that relationship between patient and practitioner, what would that kind of history look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, medicine has changed dramatically over the past 200, 300, et cetera, years. My main area of expertise is kind of the 19th and 20th centuries, as I've said. And at the very beginning of the 19th century, or even in the 18th century, touch played less of a role in medical diagnosis and investigation than it did later. And in the early 19th century, you have a kind of increasing interest in surgeons specifically, who are at the same time becoming more prominent members and more important members of what we would now call the kind of healthcare team, but they wouldn't have called it that then, identifying lumps and bumps and bits of the body, places that they can kind of identify where things have gone awry, trying to tell the difference between something worrisome, something benign, particularly in things like bumps and boils and tumours. And they have a rich vocabulary of touch in their literature. So it's something movable, soft. They compare it to things like nuts and seeds and all those kinds of things in their case notes. And so touch is a really big part of like 19th century medical knowledge making and medical care. And it continues to be so. You still have people palpating bodies, touching stomachs, feeling the pulse of a person, listening and feeling the chest as the person breathes. Obviously, as you know, Will, senses are very rarely disaggregated into their neat sort of like self-defined pockets. Touch is always part and parcel of a bigger kind of sensory matrix of care. I don't know if that's a bit of a grandiose term, but I suppose it's the one I'm going with right now. Mm. And there's also this sort of idea, though, that as the 20th century comes around, an increasing kind of technologies of medical care and investigation emerge, things like the stethoscope, MRI scanners, all these sorts of big tech things that are developed both first in the 19th century and the 20th century, place distance between doctor and patient so that they are now not necessarily having to touch every patient that comes in. And there's also increasing kind of technologies that form a physical barrier between doctor and patient. So by the end of the 19th century, doctors are starting to use, and particularly surgeons, surgical gloves in order to keep both them and their patients safe from infection. And this obviously changes the way that touch operates in the clinic, because you're no longer feeling, or less feeling skin to skin and more latex or plastic to skin, which is obviously a different experience for people, for both the person doing the investigating and the person being investigated.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So in some ways, you know, by the time we get into the sort of 21st century, you've talked about how we have all these barriers between patient and medical practitioner, things that are creating sensory or effective distance, I suppose, between the patient and practitioner. So when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic and people working in hospitals, then theoretically that inability to touch wouldn't have been too much of a problem, right? Or was it a problem?
Well, I mean, I think it depends very much on your perspective. If you are interested in the actions and activities of some healthcare practitioners, like someone like surgeons, who, as the 20th century wore on and increasing today, have more and more distance between them and their patients in terms of like gloves, drapes, all the sort of investigative technologies I was talking about, but also even now laparoscopic surgery, so where you use very long tools at a distance to go through a very small hole in the body to repair or fix something that's sort of deep under the surface of the skin, and even robotic surgery, where you have people basically using, surgeons basically using like PlayStation remotes to guide surgery from a real distance. And so the COVID-19 pandemic influenced touch in different ways, depending on what member of the healthcare workforce you're talking about. In the case of things like nursing, palliative care, and other forms of more, I suppose, generalized forms of performing care, which are often the important part. I mean, nursing is a highly technical and specialized and highly educated discipline, right? These are professionals with a huge amount of expertise. But a big part of the nursing kind of care system is also demonstrating and providing kind of obvious manifestations of compassion and kind of an emotional service as much as a kind of clinical and technical one. And this is part of the kind of requirements of being a good nurse, is that you're supposed to seem and be compassionate and caring. And there are lots of problems in what that means and how exactly it is shown. But one of the main ways that people have always and continue, well, maybe not always, but for, you know, the recent past anyway, demonstrate care to one another is through touch. You know, you put a hand on someone's shoulder if they're receiving bad news. You, you know, place a hand on their hand if you are trying to reassure them or comfort them. And during the pandemic, obviously, we saw a huge number of people dying and being very, very unwell. And they had to do that care, perform that care in a very different way. They were no longer able to put their hand on the shoulder of someone unhappy or distressed. They were no longer able to sit in close proximity with people who were suffering or even dying. I saw someone, a midwife, tweeting about how she felt she was still not allowed to or not encouraged to embrace a woman who was undergoing a miscarriage. And that remains the kind of guideline, right? And that is obviously something that has really shifted the way that healthcare and the senses kind of interact during the pandemic, and is very different to how it was before. Because despite all these narratives of like increasing technological innovation and intervention in healthcare, much of the work that is still done by healthcare professionals is this kind of care work. And care work is partly about alleviating pain or, you know, improving symptoms, but it is also about a kind of set of emotional or affective interactions. And that those interactions are often accompanied by or sort of delivered through touch.
And so I wonder if in some ways the reason that a lot of those sort of stories are obscured, or that we have these narratives that focus on decreasing touch, is because, kind of as you suggested, those narratives are based on particular types of medical professionals. So they might be based around, for example, the surgeon, for whom, you know, touch has been distanced much more than, say, nursing. And I guess there's a kind of further, you know, there's a kind of hierarchy at work here, would you say, in relation to touch and the way that we talk about touch in a hospital setting? Because I'm thinking also here about kind of other staff within hospitals, like cleaning staff, who often kind of don't get mentioned in these discussions. And I wonder how the pandemic has impacted on those kinds of people as well.
Absolutely. I think that hierarchy is really an accurate way of looking at the problem or thinking about the question about, you know, the sort of decline of touch in healthcare settings. And I think that hierarchy is also very gendered, right? That they that touch is sort of accompanied by a kind of more sort of emotional form of care work, and that kind of care work is often feminized and is also often denigrated in comparison to surgeons with their robots and, you know, fancy technologies and machines. And absolutely, I think something like cleaning staff, laundry workers, for whom touch is a huge part of their job, right? They have to touch things all the time. And not only did their role during the pandemic remain very similar, they also became increasingly important and increasingly at risk, right? Mm. That you have most of the deaths among healthcare workers didn't take place among medical staff, among doctors. It took place, it was mainly concentrated in ancillary healthcare workers, people who are often, are much more physically in contact with the kind of healthcare environment and with patients, like nurses, but also porters and cleaners and laundry workers and people working in catering services. So they're also, they're kind of intellectually denigrated as and less sort of seen as important, not only for the like practice of healthcare, but also in the history of healthcare. But they're also often on much more insecure contracts. They have less good workplace protections. They're also much more likely to be migrant workers. They're more likely to be people of color. And so that kind of hierarchy of value is a hierarchy of how close are you not only to the sense of touch, like how much touch is involved in your day-to-day work, but also a hierarchy of other things that we're more familiar with, like income, level of education, job security, and how much risk you are going to be put, you are going to be exposed to while you're working in a hospital during a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when people were kind of clapping for the NHS throughout the pandemic, you know, the people that they were being encouraged to think about were nurses and doctors, but actually, as you say, there were a kind of gendered, racialized kind of hierarchies at work in this kind of pattern of risk as well. Do you think that kind of what's happened during the pandemic is just going to be a kind of blip when it comes to the sense of touch in a hospital setting? Do you think we'll just kind of go back to the sensory normal, and that, you know, whilst the pandemic might have thrown some light on some of these hierarchies, actually, you know, for the most part, we'll just kind of go back to accepting them as normal? Or do you think that the kind of the work of touch in the hospital will be transformed as a result of the pandemic?
I suppose two-part answer to that question. One, I do think that things are likely to go back to normal in terms of whether nurses or midwives or other members of the healthcare workforce are able to touch and comfort their patients. I do think that as vaccines are taken up in greater numbers, as hospitals become safer places to be again, I do think that there will be a return to that kind of interaction, because I feel like it is fundamental to the kind of care that healthcare workers can provide to their patients. I do think that there will be a greater wariness and, I suppose, anxiety about hospitals as sources of infection, not just sources of like cure and care. And I think one of the most alarming things about the pandemic were the number of people who acquired COVID in hospital and then took it home to their homes, or to most sort of like appallingly to their care homes. And so that sort of idea that a hospital is a place that's not just somewhere to protect you, but also somewhere that can provide you, you know, that is a source of real risk. So I do think that that will remain a kind of undercurrent and might influence policies about glove wearing, hand washing, general hygiene. I mean, I think that would probably be a good thing. But I think generally speaking, the landscape of hospital care is going to, you know, return to the norm. But I do also think that one of the slightly demoralizing things about being a historian of healthcare during a pandemic, apart from all the demoralizing things about being a person during a pandemic, is how skeptical you become about, you know, real radical and concerted change that really works in the favor of our most vulnerable and marginalized members of our communities. You know, I think this could be an opportunity to, as you say, kind of shine a light on these kinds of hierarchies of labor and these hierarchies within hospitals and the people who are particularly vulnerable within those institutions to exploitation or to risk. You know, that could happen, but I'm skeptical. I don't think it will. I think that we will return to a world where doctors and nurses are really the only component of the healthcare workforce who get the kind of attention and you know, sort of public valorization or validation that they deserve, right? Like, I'm not suggesting that doctors and nurses haven't worked incredibly hard during this pandemic and don't deserve, you know, commendation for that labor, but that doesn't mean that they're the only people who are sort of deserving of the status of kind of key worker or like valued contributor to the pandemic response.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope very much that things will change. Although I think the growing kind of impression from lots of these interviews is that for most people, there is a great deal of pessimism about whether anything will ever change in any of these areas. But we will hope for the future. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Agnes. And I look forward to seeing where you go next with your research.